Hey, what's up, you guys? This is John. I'm here with my buddy Johnny, and we are coming back to Bantertown.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, because, you know, last week we were in
Terre Haute
Town.
Not as good.
Yeah, it was actually fun. I had a good
Terre
time.
Terre Haute people were very kind.
They were very nice.
Very nice, and they happen to live in a state that is very flat and a little on the dull side.
Yeah, the chicken wings were good, too, at the buffet. I think it was meal number five for me.
I didn't eat the chicken wings, so, but you were throwing them back like your plane was going down.
Well, I'm not going to lie. I may have gained a little bit of weight. Lately.
On that trip?
Oh,
yeah. We were gone like 24 hours.
Johnny, that's all it took.
Really?
When the pancakes came after I ordered the, what were
those?
Those
weren't even pancakes at that point. They were like... They were saturated with a salted caramel sauce.
It was like...
Butter, whipped cream.
It needed like something on... I was looking at... I drank those fizzy waters. You don't like those fizzy
no.
waters,
LaCroix?
Like LaCroix.
LaCroix.
I actually really like those.
Yeah.
And I was looking at one today. I like the lime. I like all of them except there's this one nasty raspberry lemonade. But anywho, the lime, I looked at it and it said 0% juice. And I was like...
Yeah. Did you think it was going to have juice?
Well, no, but I'm just like, it tastes like juice.
Oh.
And it has 0% juice. So that's what they should have put like on the meal, like for the pancakes, 0% real food.
Yeah,
like,
no nourishment.
Just take liquid sugar and just somehow pour it into my gullet. That's what it was. But
that's the thing they're finding now too, and it's much to my dismay, is that sugar is the real bad thing. Like if you could
I've known that for years.
But I'm saying they're linking it to like cancers and everything. Oh. Like if you could just get rid of sugar, but we're all addicted to it.
That's why we do Sweet and Low now, because it's way better. Nothing in there causes cancer.
But I don't know. That's a rumor. That's a myth.
It's on the packet.
No, it's not.
It says
on Sweet and Low.
Yeah, saccharin.
Yeah,
isn't saccharin Sweet and Low?
It's no. That's. I don't know what's in Sweet and Low. NutriSweet's equal.
Saccharin. Just because you call it something.
Okay, well,
else.
Here's the thing about saccharin that I read, because I've read this on Snopes.
Okay.
The anti-urban legend site, which is also where we found the the little person.
The greatest story ever told.
The greatest story ever told was not true.
Okay, I'm still holding on to hope.
So, like, these people that spread these emails say, they cut open the tumor and there was Sweet and Low in it. Or what? Like, people literally will spread this stuff. They'll say that there's literally a pocket of Sweet and Low in the tumor that they
like
cut
in
open.
The packet still.
Somehow. These people are eating packets whole. That's how you get yourself some cancer. No, here's the thing. They'll spread these things and they just keep spreading them. But the truth is, they couldn't keep making it if it literally caused cancer and it was proven to cause cancer.
Man, you don't have enough of a conspiracy theory mindset.
I really don't.
That's like saying, they wouldn't keep doing it if it was bad. I mean, half the stuff we do is bad and we keep doing it because someone's making money. And guys, that's why I'm running for office in 2018.
You got my vote, bro.
Let me tell you.
Anybody's a good alternative right now, don't you think?
Me, my dog Brutus. We could get all kinds of people elected or whatever. But hey, did you see the CMAs last night, Johnny?
I saw a couple of clips and I've read some tweets about it. I'm not like a big country music fan.
Yeah.
But did you watch it?
You know, let me put it this way. My wife watched it.
Okay, so you had it on the background.
It was in my periphery, and I did not watch it.
Right.
Like, it were parts that perhaps my eyes didn't view.
Didn't Brad and Carrie open up with a song that's hers, but they morphed it to be about Trump? I heard that.
I didn't see
that. Which I was fascinated by because country music, a lot of country music fans are big, you know, right-wing. They're Trump supporters, like apologists.
Sure.
And she did this thing. It was before he cheats, but it was maybe he'll think next time before he tweets. And
no
it was like,
way.
And people flipped out. The Twitter was going nuts. Of course, some people love it because there's a lot of, you know, left-leaning people that like country music too.
Yeah.
And it's Nashville. People don't realize how liberal a town Nashville really is.
Yeah.
Like, it's in the middle of a very conservative state, but Nashville itself is a very melting pot,
more metropolitan
than liberal area. But, I was fascinated by that they were like, let's open the thing, like just the guns blazing. That's most award shows now, though. They take shots at the president. It's like an easy target now, I guess, to do. But I don't know.
Well, and you know, it's funny. I met with my tax guy today, and we were talking about Nashville and the growth. And
yeah.
It's odd because my wife also sent me a new video. These guys have written these Nashville songs.
Yeah.
They're really funny, and I don't know who they are.
Welcome to Nashville.
Yeah, they have a part two now.
Yeah.
I guess released recently. but all the shots of it. And my attorney told me that 90 people/families a day.
Yeah.
90 a day.
Yeah, I've heard that.
Are coming into Nashville. And of course, we just passed Boston as a population, a metropolitan area. We just passed, apparently passed it by a long shot. So, wow. Yeah, it's quite the, so when you say it's not going to be just a conservative stronghold with that sort of melting pot population coming into the urban area.
A lot
of
different ideas, a lot of whatever, because they're not native to the Bible Belt or whatever conservative values. They weren't necessarily raised that way. So they come from bigger cities sometimes or entertainers. If you're coming here for entertainment, you never know what your ideals may be or what you were raised to believe.
It becomes like this weird – I do find there's like this weird conglomeration. Like there's this very southern tone. I don't mean the way your voice sounds. But I mean the southern tone of strength and almost aggressive. We're not afraid to be aggressive.
Yeah.
And yet the ideology, it doesn't seem to fit because here, if you have that tone. So I'm like a unicorn. That's what they would call me because I'm an actual Nashville native.
Right.
So I'll go to meetings all the time in Nashville and I'm the only guy in the room.
Who's really from there,
people, it's almost like they gather around to see what you might say. But from a Nashville native standpoint, certain tones of thought or tones of the way that you speak or carry yourself are matched or married to certain ideological slants, and that's not necessarily the case anymore.
I mean,
you could have this huge beard, you know,
right.
And you could have a shotgun up in the back window of your truck,
right.
And then you could be, you know, voting Democrat. I mean, you don't know that those things are not all the same. And again, they're just stereotypes, and it's not like the guy before couldn't have been doing the same thing. But certainly, I think the ideologies are mixed because...
Yeah. Melting pot's interesting. I think... We talked about how kind of we were raised in this very, it's almost like a separatist mindset, like a bubble.
Yeah.
Let's protect ourselves. Our parents wanted to protect us from the world.
Yeah.
And so then when you get like a glimpse of it, you're like, oh, this is interesting. It's almost like, so a lot of these kids, they freak out when they leave home. They're like, it's like Oz. They see things in Technicolor. And they don't know how to process it, and they flip out, or they completely. Everybody fights a little bit against what they were. It's just kind of it's an old trope that happens. My dad was this, so I'm going to fight against turning into my dad or whatever.
Right.
But just ideologically, do you think it's better to live around people and even have people in your group of people that you trust, even who think differently than you? Not just – I'm talking about key issues.
I think it's hard. I think it's going to be rare if they're very key issues that you guys are going to – I do think it's important I think it's important to listen. I think that's the problem in my own life, how many times I haven't listened. I can't hear another viewpoint, and that's what I'm trying to change. I think that to your point about I don't want to be my dad or don't want to be somebody else – many people's viewpoints are simply reactionary. They set out, and even subconsciously, I think, to be the opposite of whatever it was that they grew up with.
Right.
Because there's a liberation or there's a maturity that I have to leave home. And I think there's a health to that. You know, I need to find my own way.
Yeah.
And then later in life, sometimes you end up migrating back to similar things.
Yeah, that's the old Mark Twain bit about I thought my dad was such an idiot. When I left home when I was 18 or whatever, by the time I was 25, I was amazed at how much he had learned or something. So it's like,
right.
You don't realize, you know, you're the one that's adapting and you're realizing, oh man, mom and dad knew more than I thought. But
I really did with my dad. You know, there's some thoughts on faith and all that I guess I chalked my dad up to being kind of a hippie on some things, you know, and the other day I was thinking there was one, and we talk about it later if you want, but one point in particular, I was like, wow, Dad really was right about that. And how the more I learn and I don't know. And my kid, gosh, she does it to me. She does it to me right now. Like last night, Johnny, and so this is not an example of this, but you know, my kid's the kind of person who is really, she absorbs language well. Okay.
Like foul language.
Well, possibly. I mean, all things are possible, really. But
has she cussed yet? Has she had her first?
She came in.
Did she know what she was saying when she said it? And
No, she came in the first time she cussed, she came in and we were at our old house. And because after she cussed, we moved. You know, that was the thing. So.
That's it. We're out of here.
This worldly.
There's not enough anointing oil to put on these doorposts. There's not enough prayers.
And so she came in and she and some little boys in the neighborhood were making fun of another little boy. Yeah. And they called him something. And it was the F word.
Oh,
as a noun, which I really, I was like, they're not really.
They don't really need.
I mean,
like,
I hate
it.
Like, I find myself as an editor, writer, I'm like, oh man, they didn't do that right. But anyway, so.
You need to go tell them how to curse properly.
Boys, if you're let me tell you this. Let me tell you how it's supposed to happen. Anywho, so she came in and she said, Daddy, they just called him. And I go, whoa. And I said, so she knew there was an F word.
Yeah.
She knew there was one, but I had not told her what it was. Now, we discussed other words.
Right.
And just, you know, I don't know. It just, she was like five, mm-hmm. I think, you know. And I said, well, Sadie, honey, that's – and I'm trying to freak out because they're words. You know.
Yeah.
They're words. It's a lot like other things we say. So they're important. Words are really, really important, you know. But the fact that she said it, you know – yeah. Not knowing what it means, you know. Even if she did know what it means and said it, you know, what I wanted to really focus on is positive words as well. And I wanted to avoid the negative. I'm not telling my kid, Johnny, I don't know why you're accusing me that I want her to go say the F word. I'm not saying that.
You've
so I have to.
You know, parents, if you're listening, this guy.
It'll bring me in to do your conference. Anyway, I said, well, Sadie, honey, that's the F word. She goes, oh, really? I was like, yeah, that's that.
It was like she discovered something.
Right. She was like, oh, I've heard about this.
Yeah. She felt like she was growing up. Like, I know the big secret now.
And then she went through all the words she knew. She's like, well, is it worse than? And then she said this word. I was yeah, it's probably worse than that. Is it worse than? And she went through the whole list, you know. And I was like, yeah.
She knew the list?
She had a list. Well, she was in second grade.
Right.
They're kids, man.
Handing out lists.
Yeah. So they're none of them are using them correctly, but they've got them, you know. And,
yeah.
And so I said, yeah, let's not say that word anymore. So that was our discovery. I don't know. I just don't like to – it goes back to probably that drinking conversation. I don't want to put some allure or some like – and this is the most dangerous – you know, like some – what's the word I'm looking for here? I don't want to add some mystery to it. There should be no mystery to it. These are words. In fact, people always say to me, you know, and I told Sadie, and I'm trying to teach this to her. I have no idea because I understand. Mm-hmm. I may be speaking a little above, but I believe in speaking a little above.
Yeah.
Your kid or whomever, if you can go above, like how else are they going to come up? I mean, they need to get used to hearing things like
this.
So
what do you mean you're like saying Shakespearean?
You know, Sadie, it's like the Lord said in Leviticus chapter 75.
You speak above. Talk above your kid's head.
No.
And that way to have a conversation with you, they have to adapt.
Well,
otherwise, the kid's just going to be – so you're saying some children left behind.
I'm not – what's funny is to say I would speak above her, I'm not speaking correctly now. So
no, you're not speaking above anybody, John.
No, I'm not. So let me go back here and try to salvage the heart of what I was trying to say, if possible. Let me extract it from the bowels of this conversation.
Oh,
it's a bowel extraction,
man. If you will. Tell you what,
that's beautiful. So my point is, I had a conversation with her. A lot of people go, "Well, a kid that age is not going to understand what it's trying to say." So I said, "Look, Sade. You know what cuss words are? They come from curse words. You know what cursing means? Cursing means literally, I curse you. Like, I wish bad things upon you. That's where they started. So they've become like this thing where this four-letter word is like this thing. But in its essence, what it means is that you're cursing somebody.
Yeah.
And here's the deal. You don't have to cuss to curse somebody.
Yeah.
You don't have to be cussing. People are cursing people all the time. They're cussing all the time without using cuss words. What I really think God... you know, is worried about in our life or what is encouraging us to do is to not curse each other. So you walking over and calling that kid across the street stupid,
right?
You know, may not be the F word, but you're cursing him.
Yeah, it's the same net effect.
Right. And like we act like that God's up there and he's, you know, la 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 holding his ears, you know, because he's so embarrassed that we use some sacred thing or unsacred thing. And it's like, look, God, guys, let's be honest here. English language didn't exist when the scriptures were written.
Well, and even slang words are cultural and curse words to some degree are cultural and generational. So, you know, I've told theology students before. And kind of blown their minds before, you know, that Paul used the word scabula, which is where we get the S word. I mean, he literally was saying your righteousness is worth this.
Wow. Yeah.
And so it's Paul. I mean, we put him on such a pedestal. Yeah. He's like, you know what I'm saying? He's Jesus light. We give him such credit, but here he is. He's in the marketplace using these words. And we're like, so it's the intent, even when it's like, let no field communication come out of your mouth. I believe we gotta guard ourselves to what we hear and what we say. But man, it's like sometimes we trip over the dumbest stuff. We get shocked over things that we shouldn't be shocked by. And then we miss the real, like what somebody's trying to say. Like if you hear somebody say something that's a little bit off, or they, like let's say you hate the word crap.
Right.
Don't say crap. And then, but somebody's saying something really of value. Like even a minister, some ministers now will say something like that. And if they say the word, now you've turned them off. I couldn't even hear a word. Well, then you've blown it.
Yeah.
Because that's your own weird bias in there.
And I get the wisdom of like, okay,
yeah.
As a minister, it's like, well, where is the line between, I have to have wisdom here to
reach everybody. So that means I can't just go guns blazing and say whatever I think.
But at the end of the, that's why I talk about that, Johnny. That's, you know, as a, let's just forget being a minister for a second, just being a believer, just being a Christ follower, okay? Mm-hmm. To me, I would like to, same thing I did with Sadie, I'm in a place in life where I would rather just tear down whatever the facade is that's causing this. So you and I are having a conversation right now about whether or not a pastor could say crap in the pulpit because somebody out there thinks crap is anti-biblical or whatever.
Right.
And to them, that conviction can be valid. I'm not invalidating the conviction, okay? But because of that, they may not hear the rest of the message that would be helpful. And someone else, though, because the preacher, I mean, hear me.
Yeah.
Someone else, because he doesn't talk like a real person in 2017, like he's not valid to them either. Because it's not because I want him to get up there and start cussing or something. You understand what I'm saying? Like,
right. That whole thing to be relevant, like I'm going to be relevant, so I'm going to find out what the kids are saying. That wears thin pretty quick too, because like how far are you willing to go to be quote relevant? Yeah.
And you sound like an idiot often because you're, you know, you turn your hat sideways, you're doing what you're trying to do, and you're a 40-year-old man. You know, it's like, look. So, I mean, and so, but I think I'd rather just have the conversation with everybody present that we just had.
Mm-hmm.
Let's talk about the words that we all care about. And okay, is your conviction about this word based upon some, and I'm going to use this word not judgmentally, is it steeped somewhere in a new law? Is it a new legal thing for you that you really can't find? That might be positive and helpful, but not worth dismissing messages over.
Yeah.
Like, you know, maybe there was something deeper to hear. And sure, hey, pastor, use your wisdom. But should we really not be able as mature believers to endure certain things? So while I don't want my kid exposed, if you're back to the parenting thing, I don't want my kid exposed to a bunch of nonsense. Here's the deal, though, Johnny. She's going to be.
Yeah.
And so right now I'm limiting that because she's young. But I know the day is coming. Instead of her being like I was, to be honest, and you should cuss in front of me, either I giggled, you know, because, oh my gosh, I can't believe you did that.
Right,
you know,
right before we started, I was just
Johnny was just
cussing
dropping.
On Blue Street. You can't believe. It was like a Chris Rock record in here.
I was giggling like, anyway. And it's not weird for two dudes to sit in a church nursery recording a podcast giggling.
We are in the Nursing Mother's Lounge in rocking chairs.
We are in rocking chairs.
Padded rocking chairs.
So comfortable.
And
I can't, yeah.
People, I don't know what people think. If people think this is coming from like a studio.
Well, anywhere could be a studio now.
There are children's toys everywhere. There are goldfish crackers in the cabinet.
There's a changing station I'm looking at with wipes. And and the deal is, and by the way, we should probably acknowledge we don't have our producer, Dane, again. And it really stinks.
It does.
Like, I miss having Dane. Part of this has to do, really, this is your fault. And I think that you know why I've called you here. Because we need to talk about the fact that your comedy traveling schedule is hindering the recording of the podcast, which
I'm
is
sorry.
Our real career. The real thing that's making us money right now is this podcast.
I like to thank our sponsors, Testaments, brand new sponsor.
That's our first sponsor.
Yeah, if you've never heard of Testaments, they're the Christian mints. And you might say to yourself, why do we need Christian mints regular? Because the answer is... secular breath fresheners aren't going to do it for you. Testaments are Sometimes your breath is ungodly. That's what I guess I'm saying.
Like mine or just in general? The in general, you. Okay, yeah. Okay.
Implied you.
Right. Gotcha.
You, the listening audience, your breath is an abomination. And so you put a, you sure, you could have a Tic Tac, but is that going to do it?
Is that really going to glorify God?
Right.
Right.
Tic Tacs don't have crosses on them.
No.
Not one.
And do you know what's weird about a testament? No matter how long that you put it in your mouth and it dissolves, the cross remains.
Really?
No.
No, it doesn't. No.
It's a part of the candy. But the true cross
it's
remains.
It's like an impression. It's like an indention cross.
I've actually never had a testament. Even though they're our sponsor. Don't tell them.
It was a moment for me. I started out with some bad candies.
This is your testimony.
You start out small, you know. There's like the little bin of mints when you leave the steakhouse or whatever when you're a kid, and I could put in the money, and you take a few, and it would say like help juvenile diabetes, and you're like, I don't know how candy can help juvenile diabetes, but I'm down, whatever. So you take a few mints. Before you know it, John, I was spiraling, bro. Oh, wow. I was having, you know, an entire tin of Altoids.
Oh wow!
And chasing that with some certs, just eating them like they were candy. So testaments have meant a lot to me, and I'm glad that they're on board, and we just want to thank them for everything that they're doing. I don't know that they're doing anything, but we want to thank them in case they're doing anything.
You know, and this will be, you know what? Maybe this will inspire a listener out there to become a corporate sponsor.
Or maybe come up with your own Christian candy. I had one that I pitched and nobody liked it. It was Thy Kingdom Gum. Remember that?
I do remember that.
Thy Kingdom Gum.
You had a great graphic for that.
Right. What would Jesus chew? And nobody wanted to be a part of it.
Who wanted to be a part of Testaments?
I don't know. Like, it's taken off though. Now that we say that, but Christian bookstores, obviously they're kind of a fading star. You know, it's like, when they say like a star, you're seeing light from a star that may have burned out, but the light just now reached Earth.
You know that you and I both have products in Christian stores.
They know they're fading. I think that Christian bookstores are a fading star. We're still seeing some of the light, but they're not, like, their business model can't sustain
itself. Let's be honest. Mainstream bookstores often are, Barnes & Noble closed down.
Do you think it's because we're becoming more stupid and people just don't? Or just the online outlets?
I think it may be a combination of many factors, but I will not dismiss the idea that we're becoming more stupid.
I do have my DVD is in a few Christian bookstores, and I'm grateful to have that opportunity to reach that audience. But I do recognize that that's one of those things, like if it was in the 90s, like if you had your product on the store in whatever store, there's a few that have closed down altogether, like Family and Zonder. I can't remember who all the ones have closed down, but Family's one of them, Family bookstores.
Yeah, Family's
which is
a
like
big
hundreds
recent
of stores.
One. Yeah.
But like if you were on that shelf, that's a different thing than being on that shelf now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Unless you're Beth Moore, which she just has her own wall.
Right.
The Beth Moore wing of
Beth
the Christian
Moore and
bookstore.
Max Licato. Yeah. It's,
yeah.
Well, you know what's funny is when we go to bookstores, and occasionally we do, Sadie, Matt, can you guess what she wants to do?
I don't know.
She wants to go through the store and find a book with my name on it.
Oh, yeah.
Which is,
that
you know what?
It would be a big deal.
It is.
Daddy's famous.
It's like a, well, she knows Daddy's not famous, but she wants to be a part of the process of making him famous. And so like
Does she brag about you at school?
Yes. And
do you tell her what to say? Like if you're going to tell him that I'm awesome, here's some credits.
Sadie, if you're going to tell him, it was actually 30,000 sold.
Read the
No, you know, I'm really, it's this weird mix. I'm really embarrassed by it. Like I feel real weird about it.
Yeah.
I'm not a braggy guy, you know? And so, for example, last Sunday or two Sundays ago, we're doing a series in our church called Come and See.
Mm-hmm.
And
based on a book that you co-wrote.
Correct. And it's about the church. And
yes.
So we've been talking about a lot, Johnny. And so many of our listeners have already gone out and got the book.
Absolutely,
now, no doubt,
they have.
By the dozens. And so everybody in our church got a book.
Yeah.
Okay. There's a big stack of books in the
and
front.
And then a bill for that book. And then you guys just, you could put that $9.99 in the offering plate now, or we just get your email.
You remember the
send
video?
Send you an invoice.
Remember the video I did when they read you book, and I think you gave me the idea.
Oh, it's from What About Bob.
It was saying, What About Bob? I know we robbed.
We robbed
what
Bob.
About robbed?
Yeah.
We borrowed the idea, but I did a book thing where I had a kid in my office, and I was counseling him, and it was like, was like, I just, they used to call me PJ, you know, Pastor John. He's like, I just don't know, PJ. I just don't want to do it. And I was like, hey, man, it's gonna get better. You just need to, I just don't know. I just want to give up hope. And I was like, you know what? There's a book. And I go to the shelf and the camera comes over and it's all Reggie books.
But you're like, looking like which book? And
which
it's
one?
Every book is your book.
Oh, here it is. And I pull it right out of the middle. And I was like, how about Reggie? You can't change your past, but you can change your future. And he goes, I don't know, PJ. I was like, hey, just read it. And I hand it to him. He's like, well, thanks, man. I got to go. And he gets up. I was like, one more. Hey, aren't you forgetting something? And he turns around. This was your.
To give you a hug.
He gives me a hug. I was like, whoa, no, bro. $15.
$15. Yeah.
And then we pause it and I play the woman from, what, the lady from Ipanema. I can't say it.
Ipanema. The girl from Ipanema.
Girl from,
the lady from. Were you going to say the lady from Iwo Jima? The lady from Iwo Jima. Wasn't she with the flag? They're all holding the.
Well, I really botched that.
Man.
It was like, burr, 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 burr. I don't know. I always wanted that song at the end of a video like that.
And you can't, you stole that. You can't play it. That's royalty protected music, right?
Oh, yeah.
Was it like a variation of Ipanema?
It was.
It really was the lady from Iwo Jima. It was like pan flutes and
I recorded
kettle
myself.
Drums.
Johnny, that was back before the days that I had a conscience. So,
oh.
I mean, I don't remember, you know, I don't. Here's the deal. If I wanted to pay royalties on it, I would have known how.
Yeah.
Like, that makes it okay.
Royalty is an interesting word because, like, it can mean getting, like, a tiny 15-cent check from some episode of a show that you were on. Because right. I know these actor friends who, like, I know a guy who was on the original 90210 for, like, four episodes.
Uh-huh.
He was the guy who dated Kelly. Remember Kelly, the blonde?
Yeah.
So he dated Kelly.
I answered way too quickly.
Of course.
Yeah. Well, I think I remember her,
That's right. So he dated Kelly, and then there was like a masked guy who sexually assaulted her.
No.
And then it was like, was it that guy? So his whole arc was.
Wait, I'm sorry. So on the show that happened?
Yes.
Okay, you're telling me on.
On 90210, that was part of the story arc, was okay. Kelly dated this guy after she broke up with Villain or Brandon or
whoever. And somebody attacked her with a mask
and
on.
It was it looked kind of, he fit the description sort of the guy she was dating, and he was like, so the whole thing was, did he, didn't he? He gets 25.
Is this on Netflix? I'm going to have to go back.
He gets 25-cent checks still and hate mail from people, I can't believe you raped Kelly.
Oh, my gosh.
So it's like the best of, the worst of all of it. It's like you have to be reminded that, yes, I was. The funniest story about 90210.
What, did they ever resolve the storyline?
Yeah, he didn't. He didn't do it.
So he was acquitted.
He was innocent. It was a different guy.
He was exonerated.
But then they broke up anyway. So because she couldn't get Dylan out of her mind, you know that.
Oh yeah,
bro. You don't. Those sideburns, how pointy they were. You can't forget that.
So I'm just curious. I'm sorry. This is not the point of your story.
There is no point to the story, John.
I'm just finding it.
We're chasing so many
rabbits. I'm finding it kind of. I'm almost impressed.
Yeah.
That 90210 were they facing issues of sexual assault?
Yeah, no, that was
needs
back,
to be talked
no,
about.
No, that was back when you did that. You had the drinking and driving episode. Because remember Scott, who was Brian Austin Green's character, David Silver.
Scott?
His name was Scott. He either killed himself or he drunk driving. But it was a suicide. I think it was a suicide
thing.
So
they were addressing the issues.
They were. Yeah, it was back. That was back when, like, the late 80s, early 90s was the, tonight on a very special episode of Family Ties. You know, and then Alex would speed. Remember the I'm So Excited, Saved by the Bell?
Where Jesse took speed? No one's laughing the whole episode. They're
I'm
like,
so excited. She's dancing. I'm so excited. And then she goes, I'm so scared. And then they hug.
Oh, my gosh.
And then she gets off
that's
drugs.
Awesome.
Yeah. Because that's how you get set free from drugs. You sing. What? You sing a song and then
you
insert.
You got to come clean.
She did. She, you know what? And then they offered her grace. That's very.
It is.
They did.
That's interesting. Okay, so I'm sorry.
The
I'm
best
just
story
impressed
from,
by
okay,
that.
So the 90210, he's in his trailer one day, and he's just like, and he's a side character
who
has a little four episode arc.
Yeah.
But he's hanging out with the crew, and they all have their trailers next to his on the lot. And he said one day, they were like, that the big buzz on the set was that there was deliveries. And he was like, oh, there's mail. He thought it was like going to be like fan mail.
Yeah.
Because they got tons of fan mail, you know.
Oh, yeah.
He comes out. It wasn't. It was UPS deliveries of Rogaine for the cast members that were male. You know, you had
what?
You had Luke Perry because they were all 30. They were all like 30, and they were balding, all of them. So they all like
Jason Priestley was balding.
Yeah, like cases. I'm talking about cases of Rogaine.
No,
because they all had to keep.
There's hope.
They're in high school, And it's just, it was just such a funny thing to think, like, we think of these guys as like, well, they made it where they're famous. They got to be secure. But the insecurity just is magnified. You're like, I got to, this window's going to close. I got to stay young looking.
You know, that brings a lot of hope to me, Johnny, because I really do.
Have you ever thought about it? Have you ever thought about the old
hair transplant? What are you trying to say? Do you think I should? Are you acknowledging that my hair's falling out?
Have you acknowledged it?
Not on the air.
Oh, sorry. Come and see John's hairline.
you know, sometimes I joke with people that I theorize that if I had, like, my nephew Josh has incredible hair. Like, it's thick and black, and I'll look at him.
But he's young. It could still fall out.
I don't know.
You don't think it will?
I look at him and I say, Josh, if I had your hair right now, I'd be a senator. Right. Like, it would have done so much for me. Like, who knows? And you have this, like, you know, and he just laughs.
But we always do that.
And I'm like, seriously, though, hair is wasted on the young. Like, I know what to do with it now. Like, I would use it to my advantage. I'm trying to think of politicians, people who are powerful, who are bald. You know, can you name any? Do you remember the Simpsons episode? I didn't really let you answer.
No. No, you can't. It's impossible.
Johnny's not really here today. I'm doing his voice
right
now.
There are bald people who it's come a long way.
I hope so.
You know who made it come a long way? The
Bruce Willis?
Patrick Stewart. Jean-Luc Picard.
Jean-Luc.
Because he's like this respected actor.
Yeah.
Because when it first happened, you saw, like, okay, this is the next Star Trek. Okay,
it doesn't look like William Shatner at all.
This is 5 centuries from now. You're telling me they don't have a cure for baldness? I'm not buying this, Captain. But then, like, he's such this classically trained actor, and he's so, you know, got a great presence to him.
Yeah.
And then women found him sexy, like he became the sex symbol. And so I think he started moving the needle a little bit. He changed.
Yeah, that's not who I was going to expect.
There's a lot of schlubs who are bald, too. Like, you know, you had your George Costanzas.
That's more who I consider myself to be.
Yeah, you're more Costanza than John Luke.
Yeah, I'm not in a John Luke. Remember the episode?
You're not number one. You're more of a number two. Number one was actually Riker, though.
You realize a lot of listeners have no idea what we're talking about right
number
now.
Number one was Riker, though. He did have lustrous hair.
Star Trek The Next Generation now is so old
that
we sound so old. Talking about it.
Yeah.
So anyway, there was a guy, he always called him number two.
Well, they know him as the X-Man. They know him as Dr. X.
Correct. Yeah.
Jean-Luc.
But Professor X, I thought.
Dr. X? No, Professor X.
Professor Xavier, right. Yeah.
So, I forgot that he had.
Dr. X sounds like something else.
Well, he got his doctorate and then he went further with it. He got his.
in special powers. I'm majoring in special powers. Do you remember that back before I was a Christ follower, I used to watch The Simpsons?
Oh, right.
Remember that episode where Homer takes the. He takes the Rogaine, whatever it is, and he has this beautiful head of hair.
Right.
And all of a sudden, he just like shoots up the ladder in every area of life.
Right.
And he becomes like the VP of the nuclear power plant and all these things. He's given all these presentations. And somehow he accidentally spilt the antidote or whatever on his head accidentally the night before. So the day of the big presentation, I mean.
Wait a minute. Why would you need an antidote?
I can't help it. Well, I guess if you put it back on there too early or something, whatever it was, and he was crying about something in his head, he didn't know he had done it. But that morning he woke up and he was bald again and he still has to make the presentation.
Yeah.
And so like the room is packed. It was just the most funny thing to me in the world that it was all about his hair. Like the only reason Homer is Homer and that he's an idiot was his hair. And he stands up and people start leaving.
Yeah.
I mean, his presentation is identical to what it was. And this one guy stands and I'm thinking, which writer? I want to know what writer had lost his hair and was just taking it out on the world.
Yeah, writers are generally not the most attractive folks.
And he's to tell me about it. And so he
I mean, like TV writers.
And this guy stands up and goes, "What could this bald man teach me about business?" He just leaves.
It's like true.
It's like it didn't matter at all.
Well, no, I think about that a lot. We talked about that maybe recently. I can't remember on the podcast or just in one of our dinner conversations about how people want to get their entertainment from pretty people except for comedy. For some reason, we want to get our comedy from average people.
Yeah.
Like we want Kevin James. Like Tom Cruise would not be a stand-up.
No. I think
he's Mission Impossible, he's a superhero.
Yeah.
We want our comedy from Jerry Seinfeld, who's just kind of a nerdy, plain looking guy.
If you can find a plain looking guy, that's great.
Yeah.
Because
if you don't want somebody distractingly ugly, you know.
Can you name one person, Johnny, who is distractingly
ugly.
Please don't. No, we did. I think it was in the podcast we talked about that.
Well, there is a thing too. Like you talk about the hair thing and how it's kind of, that's a cartoon, but it's a caricature of real life, and it's actually there's some truth there because I think I read that upward mobility in your job, you're so much more likely to be promoted if you're attractive.
Yeah,
and who knows if it's related? Who knows if it's chicken or the egg? Like, so attractive people have a confidence, perhaps.
Right.
They've had a lot of things go right for them, and they don't really know why. And so maybe they have more. So maybe the confidence that they get from that causes them to move quicker through the ranks. Or maybe it's just a matter of, look, I don't want to see you anymore, Jake from accounting. Just stay in your cubicle because you look like a bridge troll. I don't. Who knows if which one's which? But I do know that it matters in almost every profession except for comedy, and almost no comedians that I know you would say are like classically handsome people.
Well, I don't. Can you hear my neck buzzing?
Is that you? What are you buzzing about?
There you go.
That's John's defibrillator.
Well, anywho, it's a very interesting thing. I'm not a real vain person. I don't think. Although I think I have more vanity than I knew the older I get. You know, because you do start caring. You're like,
yeah,
you know,
gotta be real about it.
Like, I wonder if my wife will find me attractive. You know, if I don't, and you realize there's no, then you realize how much I realize how much better of a person just in than the world my wife is because. I don't know, the best I could do doesn't seem to change anything. Although she, I don't know. Well, I want to have her in the episode.
Do you think she would answer honestly, though? Because she knows how neurotic you are.
I don't want
to. So if you said, honey, if I.
That's
like,
what I
John,
told her.
I think you're the most attractive. Like, would she just lie?
I'm so neurotic that I have already I've already prepared myself for that exact scenario. So I'll say,
sure.
Whatever you're going to say to me, it behooves you to say this. Because it would be a nuclear event, you know, if you were.
You're going to deal with the fallout of this if.
So even when she says it, I'm not sure I can believe it. Now, that's the non.
Yeah.
Truth be told, I've just decided to believe it.
Yeah.
Like, just let my wife love me. And she looks at me and she goes, wow, just don't be so dumb. Like, just let me love you. Like, okay.
Maybe don't be so dumb.
Just love.
That's a great book title right there.
Just be loved.
Maybe don't be so dumb.
That's not a direct quote, by the way.
Okay.
That's what I took away from it. I said, before I direct, my wife has told me she listens to the podcast. She is an avid listener.
Oh, that's nice.
She does. She loves podcasts and she actually loves our podcast. And I can't wait to have her on here.
This may play into our subject last week, the whole apathy thing. Because, like, the idea that. If you feel loved unconditionally, does it drive you towards, I still want to do right by this person because they loved me?
Yeah.
Like all the, like I think about, you know, people say, if I could go back to high school now, but the confidence that you have now was given to you by your wife.
Yeah.
So, and the other thing too about going back to high school that makes me laugh, people say that if I go back to high school now, my goodness, these girls wouldn't know what hit them the way I feel. Yeah, but you're not picturing yourself, I'm not throwing 14-year-old hormones on you.
Right.
Like that would muddy the waters completely.
It's
you would immediately be back.
Immobilize all of us.
Exactly.
Again, right?
It would, and the pimples and everything else. Like, no, I wouldn't.
You
medications from the future.
You couldn't pay me to go back to high school.
No, I would never want to do it.
And I liked high school, but you know, it's funny to your point. When we talk about, when I do marriage, a lot of marriage talks, we talk about the fact that that very thing you're saying. I'll look at a young couple and say, now, y'all don't know this now. Because you're in limerence. You're in this
mental. What's that?
Limerence is a mental. I heard a guy.
Limerence?
It's a scientific term.
I've never heard this.
For the chemical reaction in your brain when you're, quote, in love that causes you to not be able to see the negatives about that person.
Well, that sounds like infatuation.
When you're in love, it's almost like. It's created such. That you will.
It's delusional.
Well, it's not delusional. It's that you see the best in them, and you have trouble seeing what's. It's grace goggles. If you, you know, in some ways.
Yeah.
So now you can go too far, and you know you're dating a drug dealer who's hurting you, and you can't see it. That's why people do that. It, you know, so but over time, those chemicals, once you're together, you're married, you're in this relationship, and you know, those things begin to fade, and then people get really disillusioned.
Yeah.
Get real disillusioned. Like, you, and this is what I always tell these young couples. So you wake up one day, how many times have you heard this on TV or movies? You're right. Just not the man I married.
Yeah.
And I look at them and go, guys, none of us can remain the person that they married.
Yeah.
I mean, we just can't. I'm not even close to the guy that Laura married almost 20 years ago. Mm-hmm. Not even close. I don't look the same. I don't talk the same. I mean, there's a lot of those same things there. But and I go through all the vows. It's like, what's funny is I'm going to stand on the stage with y'all, and I'm gonna read these beautiful vows, mm-hmm. and you're gonna say, oh my gosh, it's so beautiful, Johnny. It's so beautiful. Yeah. And all the vows we're talking about. But then 2 years later, you're gonna say, you're not the man I married. But every vow.
Right.
That you took was about the changes, the change,
sickness
to come.
And in health, rich right. and poor.
What you're dealing with is that your brain or your emotional self, yeah. That's what I'm saying, you've now come to a place where you've become safe mm-hmm. in this relationship that you can now see who they truly are.
Yeah.
And because of that, you're just real disillusioned by it. Not who they truly are, but sometimes you see them worse than they are in marriage.
Yeah.
But to your point, I'll say, you guys are going to say things to your spouse that you would never say to your worst enemy.
Yeah.
And the reason is actually good. The reason, believe it or not, is actually good. The reason is you trust that they're not going anywhere. And when that moment of trust instinctively falls in or subconsciously falls in, then you become more and more comfortable saying something to them that honestly you wouldn't say to anyone yeah. else. And that's why so much hurt can be inflicted in marriage.
Right.
But at the same time, I believe it comes from a good place. There's a good symptom. You just need to learn. Yeah. You need to learn the boundaries and to go, wow, if I feel safe enough to say this to you, that's actually a good thing. Now I need to love you enough to not devastate you with those words or
yeah.
to say them in a way that they're going to be helpful or constructive, and even if it's negative, that we need to deal with this thing that bugs me. Anyway, that's a long answer to a short answer.
No, I think it's great, and you're right. Limerence, I have to look that up. I don't. That sounds like a hair care.
It could have been coined. There was a guy who wrote a book, and maybe he coined it, but he called it something. But if I remember correctly, I heard him at a live talk that he had said it was a scientific thing.
But it sounds like limericks. It's not. That's not the same thing, though.
No,
like there once was a man from Des Moines, etc. <cetera. laughs>
I don't think it's like that, but
limerence.
I do think, you know, is it apathy or how does it set in when I feel safe? When I feel, people do this with God. People do this with God. You know, you were talking before the podcast about when you begin to settle into the sovereignty of God.
Yeah.
And people react so, you know, it kind of goes back to last week and the question from Jackie, you know, if you will, because that apathy, worldliness, legalism thing. I mean, that's years of talks. And when you come into a place where you fully begin to grasp, this happened with me in some ways. I was a worker. Okay. I was an overachiever. I needed to stay ahead of myself. I didn't realize that's what I was doing until later in life, but I needed to stay ahead of my weaknesses. Mm-hmm. And so, for example, you know, if I was going to make money off of something ministry related,
yeah,
early on especially, I needed to stay ahead of my greed. So I was going to vow to give XXX away, mm-hmm. and because I didn't trust myself, I knew that, and I shouldn't trust myself, and it's not where I'm getting, but I knew, man, and it never worked. Like, it never made me stop feeling either insecure or overly secure in that. And in the same way, like, I need to stay ahead. I can't fail at school or whatever. I got to stay ahead of myself. And that, it's a pattern, a cycle. And the day that I fully accepted, and it sounds like a sermon or it sounds like a song, and I just always dismissed it. But the day, for whatever reason, that it reached my heart, the idea that I am completely and totally accepted outside of my performance mm-hmm. or my reaction, that Christ, like, I do believe there's a response. I don't mean that.
Yeah.
But the only real response required, I can't even say the words without making it required. The only role I have, let's say it like that, the only role I have in it is belief.
Yeah.
That's it. In fact, I was if you want to keep going down this road, the Bible says that
the faith it took to believe even came from him.
It came from him.
Right.
It said that while we were dead in trespasses, Christ made us alive together. Dead people don't have any role in being made alive.
Yeah.
And so I do believe, I'm not one of those, you know, I believe there's a response, but the moment I became like secure, I'll be honest with you, I wasn't real sure because I was a diligent Bible studier. Like I come to the place, and I still love studying this way. I got to always like it's like I'm two-faced. The Pharisee in me has to stop and go, everybody, I'm not saying don't study the Bible. If y'all have listened to a few episodes and you think there's a chance that I want to tell you that studying the Bible is wrong and you want to isolate that statement, pull it out, and use it against me, then, you know, I got to get over that.
You'll never be a senator now.
Exactly. I thought it was the hair. It was this.
No, it's both.
And so the point is, obviously, I'm not anti-Bible study. I shouldn't have to make those disclaimers, but maybe you're listening for the first time.
Sure.
But dude, I used to sit, Johnny, and I would study. I spent 1 year in Psalm 119. It was incredible. But I went word through by word through the Hebrew.
Yeah.
In online study guides and all, and learning and writing and journaling about it, and you know that I'll spend a year in the Book of the Bible, and I love that, and I still enjoy that. But it became so like if I didn't have it, then I felt distant, or I felt unworthy, or I felt, and the moment I woke up and went, I'm not, there's nothing required of me today. Goes back to your question. It's like, should I go, what if I don't do that today? What's it going to feel like? What is it going to feel like to not have spent an hour writing in my journal, breaking down hermeneutically the Greek or Hebrew,
right,
and still feel more accepted by God than I did before? And it was like, oh my gosh, am I going to study the Bible less? Could this be of God? Like, you know, it was a weird like reentry. I think of someone who's been in a foreign country for a long, long time.
Yeah.
Or maybe they got stuck in the debt. You know, they always talk about that. Oh, you know, you see kids on TV, man, and they're starving and it's horrible. And our kids want to say, Daddy, if they were here today, I'd let them have my whole hamburger.
Right.
And it's such a sweet thing to say. What the truth is if maybe if you gave them your whole hamburger, it would make them so sick. It might kill them.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're not acclimated to that.
Yeah.
And that's how I felt. Like I was like, I'm not acclimated to freedom.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what to do with this.
Yeah.
And that's what Paul even said. Don't use your freedom for the wrong things, but also don't be afraid of freedom. And there came a place where now when I study, I'm not doing it to earn or not. And we've talked about spiritual disciplines before and all, but it comes back to that same thing. What would someone do if they were really accepted by God? What if they really believed it? Will it drive them to do more or less? Or does that question even matter? So go, you pick it up from there because I've talked.
No, I don't know. I think, it's the relationship thing too. It's like if you knew you were unconditionally loved by your spouse, does it make you want to do better by your spouse? Or does it make you want to see, like, how much Cheeto dust can I leave on this shirt before she divorces me? You know?
Right.
Like, I don't know. I think some of it's about personality. Some people are achievers and are driven to work and earn anyway, like how you're raised, your ethic.
Right.
Some people are lazy and battle laziness. And so they're going to battle laziness in their spiritual walk too. And some people just don't feel worthy. They can say the words. And then they say, well, it's like the fear of being known. We talked about that yet last week. Like the fear of community is not just about like, I got to mark out time in my life for this. It's what if they really knew me?
Yeah.
And so if we really want to feel known or we feel like God knows everything, that's kind of great and kind of terrifying.
Right.
Because we know our deepest, darkest. And once you know, like, okay, this is a little too close. And now what's he going to demand of me? People, you know, people that aren't believers, like that's one of the fears. Like, what's this mean? I can come say this prayer, but what's next? What does this mean? I got to go to Africa now,
right?
Like, you know,
where's the catch?
Yeah. And, I think I think sometimes it's about how you process. What does freedom mean to somebody? You know, you can say, well, yeah, I believe God gave us freedom, but what does that mean? We always have our own. John Acuff posted this great status about that. About what did he call it? Secret rules. He said, he said he was at a party. This guy said, this is going into your thing about giving away before you could earn it, because you knew you could combat the greed in advance almost.
Yeah.
I'll be more righteous.
I can work my way out of this. Yeah.
He said he was at this party and the CEO was there, and his friend who knew what that CEO made said, I don't know how that guy sleeps at night. Hmm. And then he said, I realized my friend had this secret rule of a CEO is only supposed to make X. And once they make that, it's bad.
Yeah.
So it's like success is good to this point, and I've decided what that point is.
Right, arbitrary. Yeah.
I get to decide what arbitrary. And
for other people, by the way.
Right, yeah. For other people. And the danger of that is, and I never thought about this, but there are people that have that rule in their mind, and if they start to get close to that number, they will sabotage themselves.
Yeah.
Not knowing that that's why they're doing it. And so he started thinking about what secret rules do I have? And one of them was he was hurt by some people who took advantage of him and his platform a few years ago.
Yeah.
And so he said, I started having this mindset of people are going to take advantage of me, and it made me pull away from community. And he said, I'm a work in progress. You know, I'm still working on it. But it was like, and then he just asked his audience, like, what secret rules do you have? And it made me start thinking, like, man, what? So I think it's about knowing what are your patterns? Is your pattern to run from conflict? Is your pattern to enjoy conflict too much? Is your pattern to run from freedom because you're like, I can't trust myself with this freedom?
Right.
Or is your pattern to take advantage of people?
Well, it's funny when you said that. Some people, I think, hide behind conflict. You know, right now in our church and in my life, we're really trying to push people towards the right kind of conflict. But when you said that, I never thought of the fact that some people's pattern is, I'm going to blow up on you. And that keeps us from ever having to have real conversations.
Yeah.
And so you're right. It's a pattern. Okay. So I'm not ashamed to say this, but my wife loves Grey's Anatomy. Okay.
Okay.
Do you watch Grey's Anatomy?
I've seen a few episodes.
And I used to make fun of it so badly.
Right.
I'd be like, oh, hey, let me guess. She'd make her so mad. Make her so mad.
Because you could guess what was going to happen.
Yeah, I'd go, well, let me see this week. Is it a plane crash, a train crash, or a car crash in which all of them happened to all be involved? One of them possibly lost a limb, and the other surgeons were there to save them, and somehow they all magically. Like, the number of tragic things that are happening.
They end up in an empty hospital room together.
Right, right.
There's always that.
You know, and all the stuff. Yeah, and so, well, now I watch Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah.
Because I love my wife is the number one reason. But number two,
just admit that you love McDreamy.
He's not there anymore. He died.
Oh, he died. Oh, McDreamy's gone?
Johnny, that's like three seasons ago, bro.
How did they save the show once they killed off McDreamy? It's not as good anymore, is it?
I'm going to tell you this about the show writer, the main creator. Like, as much as I made fun of it, there's some real brilliance in the story. If nothing else, it's the brilliance in the way that they shock you. That's what it is. But I don't feel some shows shock you. And some shows shock you. And
say
you,
that.
And you, like, you're mad about it, you know? Mm-hmm. But there's a pattern. There's a way, like I'll turn to her and go, all right, there's no way this person's going to survive. Like, you know, the ending is too good. Something bad's, you know? So there's always that. But there was a conversation that struck me. That's why I said all this from what you were saying. And, okay, just to let you know how ridiculous, you know, I like it. So there was one of the surgeons used to be military, and so was a couple of them. And his sister was taken captive in Afghanistan.
Okay.
And they didn't know that. They thought she was dead. So 7-8 years had passed, you know, and her romantic interest had moved on. He's also a surgeon, of course. And then one day they get a call. Oh, my gosh, she's still alive. Of course, they rush her to the hospital where they are. They fly her. She needs this very experimental surgery, and they find a way. It's like an abdomen. It was like an abdomen transplant.
What?
Of the top part of her abdomen. They had. Yeah, it was crazy. So anyway, and so yeah,
an abdomen. Maybe that's what I need.
And so, anywho, she's back, and it messes up everybody's life because now the guy who was in love with her who thought she's dead, blah, 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 blah.
Yeah.
And so, but the brother's really struggling because she wants to move away and start her life again. And he's like, I just got you back. And he's kind of, you know. And so they have this big road trip, and they stop, and she's yelling at him. He's yelling at her. And she says this. And this is what I said all to get here. And she says, you know, you're the most loyal person I've ever met. And it sounds like a compliment, you know. And then she says this, but you're also loyal to ideas. You're loyal to ideas, and you can't get the idea out of your mind of the fact that this happened to me, or that you think you can protect me, or yeah. if I go away. And man, that I immediately grabbed my phone and wrote that down, because that was me. And I think that's what we're talking about today in to Acuff's post and all those things. Like, loyalty's good.
Right.
But what ideas have I been loyal to that, and it goes back to that, what ideas am I dogmatic about or loyal to that aren't scripturally loyal?
Yeah. Or you value them over people.
Yeah. I begin valuing that system yeah. or that organization or that way of thinking or that desire to avoid conflict or to pursue it. Like, I begin valuing those things because there's this whole sordid story of my past that I'm probably not even completely aware of yeah. that has led me to function in these patterns.
Yeah.
And so now I'm loyal to these patterns as if they're sacred. And if there's anything that's so valuable for me in life, it's not throwing out the sacred. There are those who will hear what we're saying and go, you guys are, you're throwing out your heritage, you're throwing out your history, you're throwing out what's sacred. Absolutely not. I want to discover what's truly sacred. I want to use my history and my heritage. I don't want to destroy those foundations. I want to build on them. But a foundation alone, which is what childhood especially really is, a foundation alone is not meant to be where you live on a, in a tent. You're supposed mm-hmm. to build upon it. And so, and if there's parts, and we talked about that before, that's built into it or mixed into it that, that were never meant to be sacred, then here's the deal. They won't stand. Mm-hmm. I don't want to wait till that finds out. I found that out too many times the hard way. I don't want to dishonor them. I want to build upon them. But there's something so freeing about saying, hey, what patterns or what ideas am I loyal to that perhaps they're not wrong,
yeah.
but they shouldn't be elevated to sacred. They shouldn't be elevated to sacred status. Only, and this may sound cliche, but I say this sometimes, but this is the thought that came to me. I know it sounds too cliche, but it just means a lot to me. That I don't want to have any hills to die on except the one that Jesus died on. Mm-hmm. Like that's a thing for me now. I don't want it. What are those things? And generally they're emotional. You don't know them till you're in it. You know? And it only, I believe, only Christ can make you be aware of what those sacred hills to die on are that shouldn't be, because there's no way to see them outside. You'll fight for them because yeah. they're that you don't know they're sacred. Only Christ can transform your life, and I think that's what freedom does. If freedom never causes you to see those things, that's why I trust for the freedom of Christ. That's what Paul said. Hey, oh, are we going to start sinning that grace may abound? Look, again, you're not near real grace until you're asking that question, and the answer is no. No, you shouldn't do that. Well, how will you know not to? Because Christ is transforming your life. He's empowering you. He's going to be right there with you. His Spirit is going to be guiding you. So don't go back into legalism to try to – the legalism is trying to replace the work of the Spirit.
Yeah.
So instead of John being able to listen, to be in community, not just God's Spirit is animating God's body, okay? So instead of being able to go to my buddy Johnny, who's in the body of Christ with me, and saying, hey, Johnny, what should I do with this amount of money? I'm praying about this, and in praying about this, I'm coming to you. You know, what I'm tempted to do is to give it all away so I have to be responsible or steward it, okay? What do you think? And by the way, everybody, I haven't made a lot of money. I'm not trying to act like it's something. It sounds like I'm
next time you see Johnny, he's going to have the most thick, lustrous toupee that you've ever seen.
I'll get off my private jet.
Oh, my goodness.
No, something like that. But whatever it may be to me is a big deal. Instead of, like, coming to you and trusting the body together,
yeah.
you know, I wanted to legalize my way out of it. Instead of trusting the Spirit and trusting in freedom to let the Spirit guide me. So we got a couple minutes left, but we'll take us out on that.
No, that's good. I think it's true, and I have that. You know, my dad was obsessed with money. He didn't have a lot. He would drag us all over the state to these things. We would get these things in the mail. You may have won one of these. You remember these?
Wow.
It's a timeshare thing.
A timeshare, yeah.
You may have won these three prizes. You've won one of these. It was like a color television or whatever, or $2,500 cash. So we'd go. That was our vacations. We did 10 or 11 of those. And wow. we'd listen to this thing.
Did you have to go?
Oh, I'd go. We'd go as a family. That was
but
the
I
way
mean, we. You had to sit in the presentation.
Yeah, we'd sit in the presentation.
Wow.
So, and we'd always win the lowest thing. We'd win the little 12-inch color, you know, television. Oh, what do you know? What do you know? They gave us the crappiest thing. But my dad was constantly starting business. Before I was born, he was starting businesses. My mom was pumping gas at a gas station that my dad tried to start in the winter when she was pregnant with me and my brother.
Oh, wow.
He had her pumping gas. He was not a good guy. So he was constantly like, it's going to turn around. He died penniless. So my rule that has affected me is when I see myself making a decision that feels like it's bottom line oriented only.
Yeah.
And there's no redemption to it. It just feels like, well, what's the money thing to do? What will enrich me?
Yeah.
Sometimes I run from that, and sometimes it's the right thing to do.
Yeah.
But I'm so conditioned to not be like my dad.
Yeah.
And not end up, when the truth is, I'm so far from my dad.
Right.
Already.
Right.
Just by being self-aware enough to know I'm already not like him because he lacked self-awareness. So, but yeah, those rules, you go, well, I want to do the right thing. And if that means that I'm supposed to go buy this house because my wife has been with me, I've tried to starve us in numerous jobs, and now I'm actually doing okay. So should I go and get a nice house? Is it wrong to have you have to ask those questions knowing you have biases and you have these weird rules that don't make – they're not spiritually sound, a lot of them. Right. They're just ticks that a therapist would have a heyday with. It's not even about that, you know.
But, man, people make those – people make those impressions, though, through religion.
Right.
That and they're either bound by it or they're liberated to do whatever they want to do by it.
Right. And some people are afraid of success. Like, we used to joke about that. Somebody did a report on you. I'll never forget what they wrote. You remember this kid that did a report on you for their school? Yeah. And they asked you all these questions. They had a binder of photos and things. And it was a synopsis of you in the first page. And it said, John Driver is afraid of snakes, success, and failure. I thought that was so great.
Wow.
That is so funny.
That's still true.
Because it's true. It's like we're afraid of failure.
Yeah.
But we're also afraid of – because success means everything I do now counts because there's something to lose. Yeah. You buy a house, now it's like I could blow this.
Yeah.
When you have nothing, it's like that's the freedom. It's good. Well, there's none of this. Once you have stakes in the game
–
and so to take your life seriously and go like, well, what does God want me to be? I want to be what if that means a big deal, then great. If it means a little deal, then whatever. But be okay with it and don't run from like making your light lower, thinking that that's holiness.
Yeah.
I'll dim my talents. I don't say you go and bragging and just shotgunning people with your fire hosing people with your talent. But I'm saying there's a way that we diminish our value. And we count that as holiness.
Yeah.
And I think it's backwards.
No, you're right.
It doesn't help anybody.
No.
Go be you on 11 and help the world and give glory to God.
Yeah.
You know?
Wow, that's good. No, you're right. And I think it's funny. It's either – no one's in the middle, it seems like, naturally. We're either – it's somebody's going to listen to you say that. They're going to be like, you know what? You're right. And they're going to go quit their job. You know, they're going to not support their two children at home.
Don't quit your job.
And they're going to go out there.
Please
don't. God wants me to be a star. Like, that's so.
Oh, Lord, I hope they didn't think that.
No, but that's my point, though. You didn't say that.
Yeah.
But it's like we're looking for either that or someone else needed to hear that because, and this is, we make everything about talent. It's really not about talent or gifting. Like, you know, the thing that you may need to be 11 on is you need to be 11 in some real relationships
get
involved so that your life matters with people. Johnny's life matters with John because Johnny's speaking into John's life. And when he goes and takes a stage, I'm speaking to you now in third person as if you're not sitting
here. That's beautiful. I like it.
You know, when you take a stage, there's a purpose behind it because we talk about it. There's a purpose behind it. Yes, you're making a living. But you would not be doing this if there was not you could do this and make more money doing it differently.
Yeah.
Like that's not what that's about. You're always asking those questions. Yeah, that's why it counts. I love that.
Just about gift. It's like I don't know. It's like peace. I don't even think about happiness anymore. I think about if I have peace in something and contentment, like that's like this idea of like I'm gonna go be happy. It means so many different things, so many different people.
Yeah.
So it's like you're chasing a mirage in a lot of ways. But I feel peace. When I figured out what I was supposed to be doing, I felt peace. And that's never really gone away. Yeah. There's been angst about other things, what to do here, this move, that move. But I never had that same thing of like, what am I even –
right.
doing. And I think you can have that not just when you find out something that you're good at that other people aren't good at. I'm saying sure. it could be anything. It could be finding pieces of husband, if he's, all of that. It's like sometimes you're looking for a reason, John. You're rowing through the night to find your place in this world. You know? It's not a lot to lean on. You need his light to help you find
my place,
your place in this world.
That's a great song.
Oh, is that a song? I should. We should lay that down. That's you writing this down?
Oh, man.
Remember that video? He's running. But then there was a woman, so it looked like he had sold out the meaning of the song. People flipped out over that.
Oh, man, people flipped
they
out.
They crucified there was a woman him over that. It's crazy.
And here's the deal, too. He's a great example. What an amazing guy.
Yeah.
But if he looked like me, would you really have ever heard of him?
Yeah.
I don't know.
You've got a good beard. He had that beard going.
He
was clean shaven when he got big, though.
I think he was doing, though, scruff shadow.
Wasn't he doing the thing? Michael Libby had a completely different look every record. Remember that?
Yeah, he had like the...
Every time you see him, he looked like a different person.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's a stylist or if he's just like...
You couldn't do that with me, and I don't think I could do that.
There's not a whole lot of flavors and stages and
No, it's like,
shades.
Hey, here's John. Here's John older, a year later.
Here's John when he just woke up.
It's like, someone's like, well, they really should have airbrushed John's picture, and I'm like, they did.
This is
this is what happened. So, well, that's great, man. Hey, that was good. That was good talk today. Good talk. And hopefully we'll get Dane back. We're going to have, hey, I don't know if I told you, Johnny, I got Reggie Dabbs coming in studio.
The
Reggie Dabbs coming in studio.
Beautiful.
I think in 2 weeks.
Remember my idea for Reggie? Because he has, you can't change your past, but you can change your future.
Yeah, I want you to talk to him about it when he's here.
Okay, good.
Are you going to be here? And we'll talk about that. There's no reason to do this while people are listening.
No.
Yeah, that would be, yeah. We're just now, at this point, we're just wasting their time.
Yeah.
To see if they're still listening.
We want to thank our sponsor, Testaments, once again. And you can get those wherever fine Christian candies are sold.
You know, and let's be honest, if you own a business, and you need to email us at, I don't know what it's going to be. Just email John at johndriver.com for now.
Send us a Twitter message.
Because we are open to corporate sponsors that would allow your business to be heard.
Yeah, by hundreds of listeners.
Yeah. Maybe thousands.
We're growing every day.
We're growing every day. Every day. We're eating more.
Yeah.
And anyway, it's send us an email or let us know. It could be
Talk ABVetPod.
That's it. There's no but if you don't tweet, you can also email me at john@johndriver.com. And
let us know.
It sounds like I was promoting johndriver.com.
We would be honored because Christian radio, that's one of the things about Christian radio that kind of is a hang-up of mine is they say they're tax-exempt because they don't have ads. Mm. They're listener-supported. And then when you hear them, they say,
This hour brought
to you by Fleener Security or whatever. Yeah. And so it's kind of, that's an ad. We have totally sold out.
Right, we'll take your
money. We're not tax-exempt.
No.
If you want to promote your business, as long as it's not, like you're not committing a crime.
Right.
We want.
Or a crime that. Sorry, we'll talk about it.
Maybe if it's a product that we... Maybe it's not... Maybe it's like... I don't know.
Pitch your crime to us and let us decide.
We're open.
You know, we'll be in community about it.
There's freedom.
It's not that bad of a crime.
Yeah, come on. As crimes go.
Yeah.
So let us know. We would love to have your... and listen, go and leave a review and give us a 5-star. And that's how we get more listeners because it takes us up in the rankings.
Yeah, I mean, honestly. Here's going to be my challenge.
Yeah.
If you laughed out loud.
Just once.
One time today. And maybe you didn't.
In an hour.
But every time you laugh out loud, I want you to share it with one friend. Like, make a commitment to us. This is a vow. I want you to make a rule,
right.
A law,
a
if you will.
A secret rule.
I want you to be legalistic about this. Not about the other things. But I want you to share with someone. Because what you're thinking is, John made me. Oh, I don't know. I don't know why. I just want you to. Or if something else like reached you today, mm-hmm. then you're like, you know what? I'd not thought of it like that. Then share with somebody or send us a message, let us know.
Or if you're like, that was complete heresy, go ahead and keep that to yourself.
Yes. Don't share.
Go ahead. You can type the email and then delete it.
That'd be a weird rule to make. Yeah. Share this every time you hear something that's heresy.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You know what? I hate this. I'm sharing it just because you're legalistic and you know how not to follow
the
rule.
There should be a button for that. It could be called like the sheresy button.
Sheresy.
You're sharing.
Is that a dad joke?
No.
That's
I mean,
better.
Sure,
than,
it is. It's better than that.
It's a wordplay, but why is your wordplay better than mine?
I don't know, John. I do this for a living, buddy. it's a honed skill.
We'll have to do our
it's
dad
a craft.
We're gonna do our dad joke thing next episode. So, hey guys, thank you.
I was going to say this one thing because you're talking about dad jokes.
Go ahead.
The funniest joke, Gary Shandling. You, the late Gary Shandling, yeah. Great comedian. Yeah. So Norm MacDonald's telling this story. He said, I met Gary Shandling and I couldn't get over how he wrote this one joke. It was like mystical to him. It's like, how did he come up with that joke? And here's the joke. Gary Shandling used to this joke and he would say, so I'm dating Miss Georgia right now. Okay, former Miss Georgia. All right, it's George Foreman. That's so funny.
That's so great.
Anyway, so that's a dad
that's
joke.
That's like a well,
that's
superior.
A funny, it's a funny, way funnier than a dad
superior
joke.
Superior dad
it's an amazing
joke.
Yeah. All right, well, thanks for listening, and we love you.
We'll catch you next time.
Do you ever hear sayings make their way through the culture and the church that seem nice in theory, but are actually theologically problematic? My name is Shara Donahue, and I'm the host of The Bible Never Said That, a podcast where we examine these popular sayings under the lens of biblical truth. We cover sayings like, God won't give you more than you can handle, time heals all wounds, and follow your heart. We also spend time exploring how people use Bible verses out of context. If you want to grow in discernment and truth, join us and subscribe at lifeaudio.com.